You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, and here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
He claims he has a misery, but he's having a lot of fun. Oh, baby, yes, baby, woo, baby, having me some fun tonight. Yeah, well, long tall Sally, she's a bit of a species guy. Everything that Uncle John needs, oh, baby, yes, baby, woo, baby, having me some fun tonight. Yeah, well, I saw Uncle John with bald head Sally. He saw Aunt Mary coming and he ducked back in the alley, oh, baby.
Ladies and gentlemen, we hope you're having some fun tonight with us here at TPC, even under the unfortunate circumstances that manifested themselves in Minneapolis earlier this week, a real travesty of American jurisprudence, and we're about to be up on the anniversary of another
one. The human comedy, basically, is what it is. You know, I can't believe that people, white people in Minnesota, are so deracinated, but that's apparently the lesson, one of the lessons to be drawn from all of this.
Well, we're going to be joined now by Tim Murdoch, who, of course, Tim Murdoch is a popular content creator from the Wolverine State of Michigan. He's going to be back with us this hour to help us better understand this the fallout from this situation. As I told you earlier in the first hour tonight, ladies and gentlemen, it was just a matter of happenstance and timing that I joined Tim, having been booked for weeks in advance, just 15 minutes after the verdict was handed down. And Tim and I went over at whiterabbitradio.net for about an hour and a half, breaking down this thing literally just minutes after it happened. And the more I know about my good friend Tim, the more I like him. Tim is, of course, another one of Bob Whitaker's proteges. And please support his work over there with Horace the Avenger, and you can follow the White Rabbit at whiterabbitradio.net. But, Tim, the reason I played that particular song, though, a quick parenthetical departure. I had the opportunity to also appear, I think, a day after I was with you on Frody Midyard's film festival, and I was talking about the hit film Predator. Of course, I had a longstanding friendship with Sonny Landham, who was one of the stars of that movie, and that song, Little Richard's Long Tall Sally, which is a great one of the early rock and roll songs. They play that early in the movie when you're getting to meet all of the characters for the first time in that helicopter scene. But you, Tim Murdoch, were also a guest with Frody just a few days prior, and you talked about another one of my favorite movies, Alien. And, of course, Alien and Predator have been movies, breakout, standout films in the sci-fi action genre, and they've had so many crossover films that have been produced. I just found it interesting that you would pick Alien and I would pick Predator, and we share the connection with Bob and, of course, so many other things.
Was Sonny in Alien too?
No, he wasn't an Alien, but those movies are of course, closely related. So, Tim, tell us. Well, first of all, welcome to the show. Enough talking. Welcome to the show, buddy.
It's always fantastic to be on the Political Cesspool, one of the only great radio stations still left. The only great radio station, so radio program
well,
still
know,
left.
It was amazing. You said that, and Frody said that. It's so interesting. You come on with your peers and your contemporaries, and for people to remember how long we've been here, and to say Frody had said it. Of course, you know, the only place I could listen to a Kevin McDonald interview in 2004 was if I tuned into your show, and so we were there. And you've been there for a long time too, Tim. I mean, right there, nipping at the heels with Bob and everything else. But anyway, we got important things to talk about tonight. But what would you say about what Frody has done there for the past couple of years? If people haven't seen it, they really need to look into this. I think it's fun, it's quirky, it's eccentric to have these nationalist leaders, but talking about film reviews. Why did you pick Alien and talk just a moment, if you could, before we settle into more serious business, about what Frody is doing over there? I just thought it was very unique.
The Decameron Film Festival, Frody couldn't actually throw one of his conferences because of the COVID-19, so he decided to have a Decameron Film Festival last year, and I didn't get to go on, but this year I went on. And I did talk about Alien, and I talked about the Alien series, but in true Tim Murdoch form, I went back to Bob's particular stuff about information is never produced for no reason. And I talked about the greater influence of the alien and UFO meme, the messages that you're now hearing blasted across primetime. So I definitely took it in a different direction. You know, that's a movie that you could talk to about the art, the famous artists that were involved. I could talk personally about...
Yep.
I could talk personally about some of the particular 3D animators for various different alien films in the Predator series, because I know some of them. I don't want to go into too many details because they're all deep undercover. But with that being said, I mean, this becomes a very big question mark of what are they setting up? And, you know, sometimes you get a series like that that comes out, and it's something very white, very creative, and very scary. The movie Alien was a terrifying movie. I saw it when I was real little. It's scary as hell. Pardon my French. But the movie's definitely terrifying, and they came back to the series because Hollywood isn't very creative over and over again. And we talked about various different underlying themes. Yeah, we talked about various different underlying themes. Well, they're mostly from a propaganda perspective.
You know, we actually talked a little bit about Alien as well, because, again, those two films have been so closely related. And, in fact, when they were pitching Predator to Hollywood, they pitched it as Predator in the Jungle, and they wanted to kind of have this First Blood. Yeah, I'm sorry. Yes, correct. Thank you, Keith. Alien in the Jungle was the sort of like the nickname for it. But, you know, I thought that Aliens was a superior film to Alien, even though you have some of the negative... you know, unrealistic things where Sigourney Weaver, who's a great actress, but she saves all of these tough space marines, and she's the one who's actually...
First of many of the female superheroes.
But that's what we talked about with... it's one of my favorite movies, actually, that notwithstanding. And then, yes, the art, H.R. Giger's creature creation, and what they did, Stan Winston with the Predator, which Frody and I were talking about that. The special effects of Predator for 1987 is still superior to a lot of the CGI you see today. But we talked about the toxic masculinity of Predator, and of course I gave some behind-the-scenes stories about my time with Sonny and the years-long friendship with Sonny. I didn't tell the story about the casino. I don't even think I've told you what happened when Sonny and I went to down to Tunica one year. But anyway... to me, Tim, it was so fascinating to see all of these different nationalist leaders. So if people don't know us and know that we have lives outside of our work and we can talk about things above and beyond immigration and race, but to hear all of these different nationalist leaders come on and talk about films and give these film reviews in a very, I mean, Siskel and Ebert, eat your heart out. I think Ebert's, one of them's dead. But anyway, it was just incredible to hear all of these different pro-white personalities come on and talk about something like film in such a measured and insider way. So it's just, I don't know, it was a fantastic idea by Frody. So I hope it continues. And I really enjoyed your contributions to that series.
Right, now enough gushing. Now let's get down to the nitty-gritty.
Well, we got to plug it. I don't know how many people know that was going on, but we're going to post something on the blog this week. So, anyway, well, Tim, of course, you and I were together just moments after the verdict. We're about to come up on our first break, so if you don't get much of a chance to answer this, we'll go straight into it after the first commercial. But you've had a few days now, as we all have, to reflect on it. Well, I'll let
What's
you
your take
ponder
on
this
it?
Question as we go into the break. What? As you have continued to consider the fallout from this verdict, what, if anything, has changed since your reaction that you and I shared just moments after on Tuesday? So that'll be the question. We'll go straight to you when we come back. Bring in Keith, and away we go for the rest of the hour. We're going to be talking about more important things. Stay tuned.
Okay, girls, about finished with your lesson on money?
Daddy, what is a buy-sell spread for gold coins?
Well, when you sell a gold coin to a coin shop that's worth, say, $1,200, you don't actually get $1,200. But don't worry, we're members of UPMA now, so we don't have to worry about that.
Daddy, what if somebody steals our gold?
We don't have any gold at the house. It's stored safely in the UPMA vault, securely and insured.
But the S&P 500 outperformed gold. Daddy, gold is a bad investment.
Some people do think of it that way, but actually, gold is money. And as members of the United Precious Metals Association, we can use our gold at any store, just like a credit card. Or I can ask them to drop it right into Mommy and Daddy's bank account, because we're a UPMA member family. Find out more at upma.org. That's upma.org.
Why don't we say to the government writ large that they have to spend a little bit less? Anybody ever had less money this year than you had last? Anybody better having a 1% pay cut? You deal with it. That's what government needs, a 1% pay cut. If you take a 1% pay cut across the board, you have more than enough money to actually pay for the disaster relief. But nobody's going to do that because they're fiscally irresponsible. Who are they? Republicans. Who are they? Democrats. Who are they? Virtually the whole body is careless and reckless with your money. So the money will not be offset by cuts anywhere. The money will be added to the debt, and there will be a day of reckoning. What's the day of reckoning? The day of reckoning may well be the collapse of the stock market. The day of reckoning may be the collapse of the dollar. When it comes, I can't tell you exactly, but I can tell you it has happened repeatedly in history when countries ruin their currency.
You know where the solution can be found, Mr. President? In churches, in wedding chapels, in maternity wards across the country and around the world. More babies will mean forward-looking adults, the sort we need to tackle long-term, large-scale problems. American babies in particular are likely going to be wealthier, better educated, and more conservation-minded than children raised in still industrializing countries. As economist Tyler Cowen recently wrote, quote, by having more children, you're making your nation more populous, thus boosting its capacity to solve climate change. The planet does not need for us to think globally and act locally so much as it needs us to think family and act personally. The solution to so many of our problems, at all times and in all places, is to fall in love, get married, and have some kids.
To get on the show and speak with James and the gang, call us toll-free at 1-866-986-6397. And now, back to tonight's show.
Rich Hamblin, who serves sort of as our marshal on this program, said, enough talking about movies, time to get back to work. And I guess I'll have to agree with him on that. We're back with Tim Murdoch, WhiteRabbitRadio.net. Check out Tim's link tree. It's like a giant redwood. He's places at places I didn't even know existed. But Tim had a great time being on your live stream earlier this week and having the unique and really uncanny opportunity to talk about this incredible story just minutes after the verdict was read. So we covered some of those points in the first hour that I made with you. Looking back on it after a few days, has your opinion changed? What more takeaways have you drawn now than you
could draw? Has it matured? Has it refined?
No, I mean, obviously the jury was warped, and they were so afraid for their lives that they voted to convict the guy. I think most people can take that away. I mean, how many juror after juror said they were scared to death of anything but a guilty verdict? They were afraid of their houses burning, afraid of everything burning, so I think just hearing what was said afterwards, which was somewhat predictable, I guess, if not totally predictable. I think, you know, over the decades, I've seen so many guys, I don't know that I've seen so many gals, but so many guys that carry the moniker pro-white, or maybe they're in this group or that group, get railroaded. There are so many people in jail that shouldn't be in jail that are white simply for belonging to a particular organization. We need to only look at what's happened to the whites that showed up at January 6th, and many of them, male and female, grandmas and whatnot, are still in jail. But this is something what people have to understand. This is something that James Edwards has seen for decades. Various different parties that get walk sideways or get caught jailwalking and belong to an organization that the establishment does not like, and they go after them legally. What we're seeing now is that anyone white is getting hit. And in a way, it's a very honest thing. Because if it's just me or James Edwards losing a social media account, like I just lost my Twitter recently, one of the largest nationalist Twitter accounts in the world went down, but I lasted longer than Donald Trump. But like I tell people, you know, if it's just me, I've lost accounts everywhere. It's not a big deal. If it's just James Edwards, it's not a big deal. But when it's the head of state, now you're cooking with gas. When everyone white gets the white nationalist treatment, And, you know, if you get branded that 20 years ago and they can get you on some charge, they're going to get you on charge. And we've seen several different people over the years, over the decades, go to jail for stupid reasons, meaning they didn't belong there. Now we've got a much wider group. You've got a target of about 100 million white Americans somewhere in that area that they think voted for Trump or did or didn't. And if they look sideways or go to a rally or whatever, they're getting railroaded. So this was a case of a cop getting railroaded because he was white. He was white, and he was the ultimate evil, a white man with his foot on the back, or his knee on the back of a black man, and that's the ultimate source of evil. And he becomes the villain, the villain in their narrative, you know?
Yeah, Tim, this is Keith. That's exactly right. That's what systemic racism, institutional racism, and white privilege taken in total are intended to accomplish. There is no longer such a good thing as a good white, and apparently that hasn't gotten through to a lot of whites, particularly the Minnesota white nice whites of Minneapolis or Oregonian equivalents in Portland.
Yeah, because we don't have enough people calling it anti-white. It's anti-white terror squad. It's an anti-white genocidal scam. It's not moral. It's not a moral system. It has nothing to do with justice. It has nothing to do with being moral. It has nothing to do with writing history. It has to do with wiping out whites. It's a religion.
It has to do with race. Correctly. It's all about race, Tim, and what it that's what it's been about from the very beginning of the civil rights movement.
Yeah.
The civil rights movement was not about racial reconciliation. It was about racial polarization. And I hope that some whites
it was a Versailles Treaty against white America. They didn't realize it.
That's a good point. That's a new way to put it.
Yeah, that's exactly what's happened. And basically, it's like a caste system. Blacks are now the Brahmins. Whites are the untouchables. What the Brahmins do is just the business of Brahmins. If blacks kill blacks, nothing to see here, nothing to comment about. On the other hand, if an untouchable white kills a Brahmin, a black, under any circumstances, that is a high crime and misdemeanor that needs to be punished to the utmost extent of the law. This is the new America that we live in now, and basically until whites embrace identity politics and have a sense of racial solidarity that at least approaches that of all other groups, we're doomed. People you can run, but you can't hide anymore. They're coming after you. Cities like Memphis, Minneapolis, Detroit, anywhere like that, you cannot expect a fair trial. What should have happened in Derek Chauvin's trial right off the bat is that they should have granted that change of venue and sent it up to one of those counties on the Canadian border. Maybe they could have gotten a fair shake there, but I don't know how deep the roots of Minnesota nice are. Maybe you have a better read on that, Tim.
Well, you're dealing with a typical type of scenario where you're dealing with whites who are who basically have been wrecked mentally with the propaganda, the anti-white propaganda, and they're so far removed from reality. Then we have actually a very interesting mix right now. You have a lot of whites who are awakened or awakening very rapidly. You have a whole segment that are stuck. They can only say certain words, certain phrases, and go through the motion. They're incredibly brainwashed, and they actually become obstacles to the system in this particular point, very, very similar to the late stages of the Soviet Union. And then you have, of course, the Khamazars of various different stripes who are enforcing the anti-white doctrine. And in a time like this, the ones going through the motions are actually going to bring down the whole entire apparatus, meaning they're going to bring it down. And I'm not talking about bring it down through a stock market crash or bring it down through some type of giant collapsing type scenario, but bring about the actual end of the particular anti-white regime, the current anti-white regime. And they're going to do it simply because they can't get out of their own way. It's so anti-white. It's so basic. It's so blatant. Every day I turn around, I read a new headline. I was reading one to James on just this week out of Russia Today that talked about a headline on Russia Today that said how anti-white, woke America stuff was just anti-white, and the ultimate agenda was genocide. This type of headline would be unthinkable one time, but when you have those type of headlines, meeting the actual brainwashed, crazy anti-white, as well as just the brainwashed ones going through the routine, that's a toxic mix. And then, you have all these people awakening, and then you have the work like James Edwards has done in the political cesspool over the years. This is a one toxic brew, and then you have the regime going after everyone white and punishing them in ridiculous fashion. You know, it's kind of like we watch Tucker Carlson at night, and one end Tucker says, it's not about race, Carlson. It's not about race. It's not about race. On the other end of the spectrum, you got the average white viewer who's getting attacked every day racially. That's not sustainable, guys.
It's all about race. And somebody needs to tell Tucker and the rest of these cucks and all of the people that from the Heritage Foundation, yada, yada, all those type of people, that's exactly what it's about. It's Frantz Fanon coming to life. Frantz Fanon, the black Guyanese French Marxist, said in the 40s that the true wish of the slave was not to achieve his freedom, but rather that he and his slave master exchange places. And that's what they have in mind. They have in mind for you enslavement and genocide. And we cannot any longer accept any leaders, either Republican or conservative, that will not identify race as the problem.
Tim, when we come back, I want you to marinate on a couple of things. The white police officer who shot the would-be, I guess, attempted murderer, if she had been able to plunge that kitchen knife into the heart of her would-be
the pink girl.
So we'll ask you about that. Also, the BLM insurrection in Oklahoma at the Oklahoma State House. We'll ask you about two things when we come back.
Pursuing liberty, using the Constitution as our guide. You're listening to Liberty News Radio. USA Radio News with Dan Naraki.
Mexico's president will hold talks with Vice President Kamala Harris in May to discuss the ongoing immigration issue at the U.S. southern border. President Andre Manuel Lopez Obrador will meet with Harris on May 7th. Mexico says the president would like to discuss cooperation on the COVID pandemic alongside discussing ways to stem the flow of migrants from Central America to the U.S. And President Biden has officially recognized atrocities committed against Armenians in the early 20th century as a genocide. In a statement marking Armenian Remembrance Day, the president said the day was a time to remember all those who died in the Ottoman-era Armenian genocide and recommit ourselves to preventing such an atrocity from ever occurring again. Previous administrations have avoided using the word genocide out of concern of damaging relations with Turkey. An estimated 1.5 million Armenians were killed by the Ottoman Empire between 1915 and 1923. This is USA Radio News.
When thinking about life insurance, my accident reinforced you never know what tomorrow might bring. That's why I reached out to AccuQuote. AccuQuote helps people find a life insurance policy that meets their needs. Since 1986, they've helped millions of folks save up to 60% on their life insurance by comparing the rates and features of dozens of top-rated life insurance products. A healthy 50-year-old non-smoker can buy $500,000 of 10-year level term for less than $45 a month. A 60-year-old under $120 a month. Longer or permanent terms are available. Even if you already own life insurance, you really need to check out my friends at AccuQuote. Don't worry about health issues. Remember, they help me. As a pastor, I'm concerned about your soul and helping you to make sure your family is taken care of. Life insurance is more affordable now than ever, so don't make them wish you'd made that call. 877-437-4781. Call now, 877-437-4781. 877-437-4781.
Rates, policy forms, and availability vary by state.
President Biden is expected to propose an increase in the capital gains tax up to nearly 40%. That's near double the current rate. The hike will reportedly be part of his American Families Plan that will propose billions in tax credits for family and domestic programs. Senator Steve Daines says that using tax hikes to pay for this plan would damage jobs. The Montana Republican tells Fox News that the better thing for the economy would be a cut to the capital gains tax rate.
What Biden is suggesting here, these massive increases to capital gains, is exactly the wrong thing to do if you want to keep job growth occurring and wages increasing. It's shocking to be able to see the fact that you add, of course, then this new rate that Biden proposes, plus the Medicare 3.8% surcharge, plus the state taxes, will have capital gains rates north of 50%. That is going in absolutely the wrong direction. Anything we should be doing is we should be cutting capital gains taxes, not more than doubling them.
You're listening to USA Radio News.
Oh, yeah, oh.
It's time to jump back into the political cesspool. To be part of the show and have your voice heard around the world, call us at 1-866-986-6397.
Okay, so this situation in Columbus, Ohio. Any reasonable observer would see that there was this one black woman, I mean, she was a teenager, 16 years old, about to murder another black woman with a knife. She had a kitchen knife. A white cop prevented it by putting down the would-be murderer. It was a justifiable shooting, if there is such a thing. And there is, by the way. LeBron James, though. LeBron James didn't think so. LeBron James went onto his Twitter account with a picture of the white officer and wrote in all capital letters, "You're next." That's LeBron James, one of the most powerful sports ball figures in this country.
He's also a high school dropout whose next best job option to playing in the NBA is riding shotgun on the neighborhood garbage truck.
That's right. But the difference in this one, Tim, and the situation with Chauvin. And by the way, I just want to say what I was saying to you a moment ago during the commercial break. Tim Murdoch is one of our treasures.
He's one of the great talents that we have
really,
in our movement.
It's just amazing how professionalized and how talented this movement has become. And we're seeing it evolve in real
time.
How
it has thrived under the most adverse circumstances
imaginable.
That's right.
The more adversity, the more it thrives, actually, because, I mean, it's come on the scene now in the last 5 years in such a way. I mean, Tim obviously predicts
that. Millions
of
dollars can't produce for the left what we have produced on pennies.
Anyway, whiterabbitradio.net. But, Tim, the Fraternal Order of Police actually defended the cop in this very justifiable shooting a hell of a lot more than they... Well, they didn't defend Chauvin at all, but he wrote, LeBron James, with his vast resources and influence, should educate himself and, frankly, has a responsibility to do so on the facts before weighing in. This is disgraceful and reckless. The officer saved a person's life. No amount of gaslighting will change that fact. Well, they're right. LeBron's wrong. You're next is nothing but a not-so-thinly-veiled threat against this white officer. He saved the life of somebody, but this is just a typical, it's typical of this community. Unfortunately, I hate to say it, it is. There was a lot of monkey shines going on and even adults engaging in this melee before the point of confrontation that has now been so famous. But, Tim, the point is that the media tried desperately to make this the next Derek Chauvin, but it doesn't look like it's going to stick. What's your reaction to this in Columbus, Ohio?
No, you got two teenage girls, and that's the challenge. You got two teenage black girls. You know, they're future doctors and lawyers and rocket scientists and stuff.
Indian
and,
chiefs.
And they were there. You go. And they were involved in a knife fight. One girl got a knife and was gonna f her up in her words exactly. And the thing
she was off the chain,
the
as they say.
And the thing that saved the white officer for. No doubt about it, is the fact that you have this black veteran that also lived in the neighborhood, an African-American veteran, and I don't know whether he was in the Army or the Marines, but you get the point. And his home, his basically security cam captured it all from another perspective. And he came out and revealed the security footage and everything else, saying that, no, he had to do that to save that girl's life. I mean, this girl was running around. And, you know, if a cop's there on the scene pulling a gun and you're running around with a knife trying to stick someone, you're crazy anyways. You know? I mean, that's just all there is to it.
Well, it was so obvious from that tape.
If you don't have enough sense, let me tell you, cops right now, police officers, where I grew up, they can be out of control. If you're walking down the street with a knife, going to stick someone, and the cop is there with a gun out, and you're still walking down the street, you don't drop the knife, you're crazy. You're going to get killed. That's just the way it goes. That's the way they're trained. It's not. We're not in, Mayberry, where Andy Griffith has his pea shooter and he doesn't pull his gun. It doesn't work like that. And so these particular neighborhoods, it's just a typical story. And this happens all the time. I lived in Chicago for quite a while at one time. I worked there. And you know, Chicago is just absolutely destroyed through black-on-black violence. So this is quite common, and you know, this is going nowhere. LeBron James did take down his tweet and everything. But, you know,
but he really hasn't changed his opinion, has he, though, Tim? He's
Well, I got the answer to that. Keith. I got the answer, gentlemen. He said he did write a rejoinder. I'm so damn tired of seeing black people killed by the police. This isn't about one officer. It's about the entire system. And they always use our words to create more racism. So LeBron's saying by putting up this officer's picture and saying you're next in all capital letters that he's the victim here. We're making it about race. And he Ramsey Paul had a great response to that. Maybe blacks should be accountable for their own violent behavior. If this sweet little girl was not attempting to plunge a knife into the heart of another girl, she would still be alive. And that's the thing. And George Floyd would be alive if he wasn't a petty criminal.
Well, it's exactly what I said it was, though, James, earlier.
Trayvon Martin would be alive and Michael Brown would be alive if it wasn't for their own actions. LeBron James says, I am desperate for more accountability. How about accountability of your own people, you idiot? Shut up and dribble.
Well, see, again.
Peterson said, shut up and dribble. I'll say,
look,
shut up and dribble.
It's the caste system. What Brahmins do, blacks, to
all
other
right,
Brahmins
yeah,
is okay. But on the other hand, what a untouchable, a white person does to them threatens the whole fabric of society and this brave new world created by our media.
All right, Tim, I said a moment ago, we need to clear Tim after this segment because Tim works tonight. I mean, Tim is on the air for a couple of hours before he joins us on Saturday nights. He actually goes right off the air, hops right on with us on the
night. Had plenty of gas left tonight, apparently.
He's got an endless tank, but that being said, I told Tim 30 to 45 minutes. We're coming up on 45. We can keep him all night long, and it wouldn't be a wasted minute. But, Tim, you got a comment on what we saw out of the BLM protesters. They stormed the Oklahoma Capitol. They interrupted a session of the Oklahoma state government. Are we going to see the FBI hunt down every one of these insurrectionists, quote-unquote, like they did with the January 6th Capitol tour?
I mean, they might hunt down a white one.
There were a couple of collaborators.
That was a joke. Yeah, I mean, you'd have to have a Trump hat on or something like that, or a cesspool T-shirt on or something. We live in clown world, guys. We live in clown world. And this is the way clown world looks. And this is what the end looks like right now. I mean, right now in California, and this is something I actually support. Caitlyn Jenner is running for governor of California. And this is the governor they deserve, Caitlyn Bruce Jenner. Or I don't know what I'm allowed to say, but I don't know what I can say. But, you know, this is such a joke. This is such a joke. We're going to have, like, The Rock, the actor The Rock for president. And this is Idiocracy, the movie, in IRL.
Yes.
And furthermore, it's a narco-tyranny, as Sam Francis said, that we're living out a narco-tyranny at all levels, basically, in our society.
The Caitlyn Jenner thing, I mean, look at me and you, Tim, both calling him Caitlyn. I mean, it's Bruce Jenner. He's a very mentally ill and mentally disturbed male. He's a man, and his name is Bruce.
But of course, being married to a Kardashian could do that to you.
I mean, this came up tonight, and I could not get a straight answer from my chat because, you know, I don't know anything about this. Does he still have the sausage and the beans? I don't know how far did he go in this deal.
He went all the way.
The family. I think he did. I think he got the sausage and the beans cut off, which makes him a problem. I don't know, but obviously we got it. You know, I feel bad for mentally ill people.
I don't know
what the deal is.
you can mutilate your genitals, but you don't change your chromosomes. And so Bruce, even if he lopped off his sausage.
Being married to a Kardashian could do that to you.
He's still an Olympic decathlete, whatever they call it. He won the decathlon champion. Yeah, he's still there, and he still's got all the testosterone and stuff. He's just running around without the sausage and the beans, I guess. But the fact of the matter is he's now a natural conservative, and he's going to be a Republican that runs California. And I'm thinking that's probably the morning, you know, California splits off and goes in the ocean. All our fine listeners out there will grab a surfboard and hit the Midwest in a one big wave. But this is the end. This is what it looks like. And it's across the board. It's just crazy after crazy.
T- Tim, you're brilliant, because that was actually one of the things that I thought we'd have no way to shoehorn into this particular show, because we're trying to wrap up our Confederate History Month special series, and we already shaved an hour off that tonight.
I made connections that are not supposed to be made.
Well, but I was going to
say, the leading conservative in California is Caitlin Bruce Jenner. That alone tells you where we are as a nation.
Can he win?
We'll
can he
C.
beat
B.
Gavin
Jenner.
Newsom?
We'll call
can
C.
he
C. beat Jenner.
Can he win? Yeah, can he win? I mean,
he's the governor California deserves right now.
He is the governor that conservatives, mainstream conservatives deserve. That's he's it,
100%.
Man.
100%. They will fall in line and worship him. Watch Lindsey Graham say, "Oh my God, he's a natural conservative."
Hey, Kim, Lindsey Graham's, Bruce has got a, Caitlin's got a hell of a lot more testosterone than Lindsey Graham does. That's ironic about this. But hey, Tim's one of the best of the best, ladies and gentlemen. Support his work, whiterabbitradio.net. Tim, thanks for doing your show and then immediately jumping on to ours. We love you, brother. Can't wait to collaborate with you again. We'll talk to you again soon. Godspeed.
Anytime, sir. Thank you.
Have we realized the assault against our lives, our liberties, our faith? To defeat this assault, Christians and all people of goodwill should have strategies to prevail in our faith and principles, which are simple. No need for a complex formula. One goal, one aim. A strategy like the heroic Christians of the past. We win. They lose. Nothing less. Big Q, Little Q. The Calm Before the Storm. By a friend of Medjugorje. The strategy of heaven revealed. Big Q, Little Q. The Calm Before the Storm. Available on Amazon.com. Or by calling Caritas in the U.S. at 205-672-2000.
The Foundation for Moral Law is a nonprofit legal foundation committed to protecting our unalienable right to publicly acknowledge God. The Foundation for Moral Law exists to restore the knowledge of God in law and government, and to acknowledge and defend the truth that man is endowed with rights not by our fellow man, but by God. The foundation maintains a twofold focus. First, litigation within state and federal courts. Second, education. Conducting seminars to teach the necessity and importance of acknowledging God in law and government. How can you help? Please make a tax-deductible contribution, allowing foundation attorneys to continue the fight. You may also purchase various foundation products as well at morallaw.org. Located in Montgomery, Alabama, the Foundation for Moral Law is a nonprofit, tax-exempt 501c3, founded by Judge Roy Moore. Please partner with us to achieve this important mission. morallaw.org.
The spirit of the American West is live and well in Range Magazine, the award-winning quarterly devoted to the issues affecting the American West. Each issue contains informative articles, breathtaking imagery, as well as the culture of cowboy spirit today, and gift ideas like the 2021 Real Buckaroo Calendar. Order online from rangemagazine.com. Loving Liberty Network salutes the spirit of the American West at rangemagazine.com.
Well, my mom smokes and my dad smokes, and I saw them smoking, so I tried it. They're telling me not to smoke, but they smoke themselves.
When it comes to smoking, are you sending mixed signals?
But when you teach someone a certain way to do things and you go back on that certain way, it sends mixed signals to the person that they're trying to teach. The parents need to be the example.
Smoking. If you think you're old enough to start, you're smart enough to stop. A public service message from this station and the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
Welcome back to Get On the Show. Call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
Well, again, thank our featured guests of the evening, Tim Murdoch, Horace the Avenger himself, WhiteRabbitRadio.net, one of the best of the best. Love Tim. dearly as a brother and as a compatriot in this cause. So this is Confederate History Month, after all, and we had originally intended, originally penciled in 2 hours of CHM coverage this night, but we are sometimes, of course, overwhelmed by what the bird brings in, and this week it brought in the Chauvin verdict, and of course the situation in Columbus,
the Nicholas Reardon case,
couldn't have been anticipated or predicted when we planned out this weeks in advance. So we did trim our Confederate History Month coverage to the final hour tonight, but I want to give you a little bit of a preview here, and don't forget that our Confederate History Month on air coverage is complemented by some articles we post at thepoliticalcesspool.org. We have there featured this week, A Yankee Apologizes. This comes from a mainstream conservative by the name of James Perloff, and he said, as a constitutionalist and as a conservative, I had to be honest with myself and audit the war between the states, and in doing so, he came to the conclusion, and I don't think he's a Southerner, that the South was right, and
he's from Massachusetts. Actually,
there you go. So there you go, Keith. He was indeed a Yankee, and he wrote why the South was right and white, I guess. But he also offered an apology on behalf of all Yankees. Do we accept the apology, Keith?
We've got to at this point. We've got to have all white people getting on the same page, and I'm glad to hear that Mr. Perloff understands it. The key that is being more and more responsible for this change is Jefferson Davis's book on the causes of the Civil War.
And he wrote that book underneath the slate roof of Beauvoir, which so many of our listeners own a fraction.
I have a piece of the rock, I tell you what, and I think you do too. But see what this does, if you read what it is, you see that at the beginning of the Civil War, it was all about money. What Lincoln proposed to do was, I'll let you go, but we still get to collect all these tariffs from you. Well, of course, no sovereign nation could allow that. So that was his main concern. He told the Virginia delegation that came to visit him to try to head off Virginia's secession. He didn't say, what about slavery? He said, what about my tariff? Well, all that changed on January the 1st, 1863, and the Emancipation Proclamation came out. Why did it change? It changed, in a nutshell, because he wanted to keep Britain out of joining the war on the side of the Confederacy. Britain had abolished slavery in 1833, a mere 30 years earlier. There was still a big constituency for abolition in England, and he knew that if he converted and made the whole thing about slavery, what would happen is that England would not join the war on the side of the Britain would not enter the war on the side of the South. And without having a foreign nation come in, the American revolutionaries could not have won the American Revolution, and the Confederate revolutionaries could not have won the Civil War.
Keith, I want to read this to you. This was one of the aforementioned pieces that we have posted. I've tried to post two a week to accentuate our coverage here on the air this month of Confederate History Month. We're going to wrap it up in the third hour tonight, a big hour totally dedicated to our Southern patrimony, our shared history as Southerners. But as Southerners, we posted this article, The Southern Legacy of Prestige and Resistance. And Keith, if you'd give me a moment, I'd like to read it to you and then get your response. It's relatively short, so it'll just take a couple of moments. As Southerners, Clinton Cook writes, we are the beneficiaries of a great inheritance. Our forebears, so many of whom strove for noble ideals and saved and sacrificed for the future, all bequeathed to us their posterity. These lands, which were settled and cultivated by our ancestors, whose blood and toil built it into one of the most rapidly developing, culturally rich, and prosperous parts of the world. Here, on the frontier of Western man, grew an agrarian society defined by what? A love for God, music, literature, concepts of chivalry, and the revolutionary spirit that once birthed a great nation. A land of unrivaled beauty, as diverse and wonderful as the organic regional cultures that coalesced in communities of peoples from a common ancestry, who are preceded by generations of hardworking and virtuous folk. We talked to Michael Hill about that. The legacy and traditions of whom to be carried into the future by their descendants, us. Through the 19th century, our ancestors were betrayed by their own countrymen, quote-unquote, beset by hordes of Yankees and foreigners who ostensibly should have been their brothers, but who rather fought them to a standstill. Our people fought them to a standstill despite being outnumbered 3-1 and having little to no resources for waging the war. For years, it seemed more and more likely that these heroic men would succeed in their, as yet to be, lost cause to defeat a tyrant in the form of President Lincoln and secure for themselves as well as generations to come a true and lasting independence that would allow for the realization of those Jeffersonian ideals which characterized the struggles of the recent past. But alas, this was not the destiny of our land and our people. Now, here today, somewhat recovered, despite our land still being looted by carpetbagger politicians being invaded once again, this time from the Third World, as well as the deracinated North and being subjected to all manner of abuse, after all, that has gone into climbing from the ashes of war and betrayal, how is it that our people can tolerate further insult and injury seemingly without end? Through decades of psychological abuse in the form of propaganda aimed at making us believe that we're somehow inferior because of where we come from, guilt of sins prescribed to us by people who hate us with no basis in historical fact, those same people engage in chicanery on a regular basis to disenfranchise our people through use of mass immigration to slowly turn our states purple so that we have less and less influence on national politics, where it is even becoming difficult to gain adequate representation in local government. For those trying to divide us and drive us from our land, just as they've been trying to erase our history, they believe the South is just a place on the map. To us, it's the land of our ancestors, a land fought and bled for, where our families toiled to provide us a decent life. It's home, it's Dixie, and it's worth defending. And so we defend it here on this program. We use our voice to defend it, to defend and honor our ancestors. It is Confederate History Month, ladies and gentlemen, and don't you forget it. We never will. For as long as we've been on the air, we've celebrated it, and we always will.
The truth of the matter is, James, that all the intellectual heavyweights among the founding fathers almost invariably were Southerners. Jefferson, Madison, Monroe, Mason, Patrick Henry. All of these people were the ones that really crafted our founding documents, the Constitution and our government and the Declaration of Independence. Now, what we need to remember about what has happened to us now is that they are flooding us with strangers that they think will vote Democrat. The Democrats were alarmed. Their timbers were definitely shivered by the election of an outsider, Donald Trump. They decided that they could not let that happen again, so they cheated to get Joe Biden elected, which they did. And now that they've got him in, at least ostensibly, they're going full speed ahead. Damn the torpedoes, full speed ahead, as David Farragut said at the Battle of Mobile Bay. They're trying to change everything so drastically, like eliminating the Electoral College, making District of Columbia a state, doing away with, all sorts of safeguards that are in the Constitution, and by having reparations for slavery, bankrupting the nation. They intend to make all of these changes irreversible so that we will be a one-party state from here on out. This is a very dangerous situation in America now, and it's just like what our ancestors faced in 1861. We've got to make sure that we don't make the mistake they did, which was that nice guys finish last.
Well, you know, our ancestors were ravaged by the federal invader, who, rather than be gracious in a manner befitting men of their supposed stock, as Clinton Cook wrote in this piece, instead descended into barbarism when dealing with those who dared to claim the right of self-determination. All that had been built was either pillaged or left in ruin by the conquerors, the land scorched, the people destitute. It would take generations to rebuild, and the devastation was such that to this day the South lags behind in the areas of industry and infrastructure, whether as a result of having been made impoverished for so long by the calamity or by design of meddling politicians who could not tolerate a self-sustaining Southland. And they did this, they continued this into World War II, of course, with the despicable, heinous war crime at Dresden
That was just the tip of the iceberg. Everything that they did in that immediate post-war time, like starving the German prisoners to death and stuff like this, is, you know, indicative of this, you know, new left-wing approach, you know, scorch and burn all of your enemies, destroy them. We need to be awake and know that this is what they intend to do. And what we need to do is return to our southern agrarian roots. Move out into the country. Get out of these cities where you're going to be subjected to a kangaroo court like Derek Chauvin was. And like Nicholas Reardon may well be before all of this is over with. They are going after every white person, not just prominent people in the white advocacy movement. And they're doing this to show that all white people are guilty and all white people deserve punishment. Hopefully enough white people will realize this before it's too late and get on board with us.
That's just a palate cleanser, ladies and gentlemen, from our earlier commentary. That's a transition into the third hour, which will be all about Confederate History Month. Stay tuned.